How can you do this to me? I'm obliged to. As an attorney practicing law in the state of California, I am an officer of the court, and I would be derelict in my duty to know that a crime has been committed without reporting it to the authorities. You reported me. Criminal charges. I was obliged to, Mr. Fletcher. You just bit the hand that feeds you. How can I support my ex-wives if I'm in jail? I have bitten the hand that has refused to feed us. You haven't yet supported your ex-wives. Mr. Gillette. Yes, Mr. Fletcher. I wonder if you and I might not meet in some quiet, out-of-the-way place, a bar, or take a ride in the country, spend a night or two. Are you serious? Of course I'm serious. I think that's a delightful idea. I don't know how you guessed, but I am rather attracted to you, Mr. Fletcher. But I really think we'd better put these legal matters behind us first, don't you? I was thinking this might be a very good way of putting our legal matters behind us. Your legal problems, Mr. Fletcher, are between you and your wives, and now, of course, a criminal court. Any relationship you and I might have should have nothing to do with your legal matters. Are you sure? Mr. Fletcher, are you pulling my leg? That's what I'm pulling, yes. Mr. Gillette breathed 3 times before speaking again. Mr. Fletcher, I don't know whether you are a very, very cruel boy or just thoroughly confused. I would prefer to think the latter. I am a member of the Anglican faith. If you are confused, I would be extremely pleased to continue our relationship more affectionately at some future time. For the moment, however, I advise you that a subpoena to face contempt of court charges Friday morning is immediately forthcoming. I also advise you that criminal charges for fraud have been filed against you, and although I'm not your attorney, I would suggest to you that you present yourself at the main police station this afternoon, identify yourself, and allow yourself to be arrested. This should permit you to be out on bail in time for your other court appearances Friday morning. Thank you very much, Mr. Gillette. See you in church. Fletch was chewing the second half of his first sandwich, feeling guilty about what he had done to Sandra Faulkner, when the phone rang again. Hello?
Fletch, this is Barbara.
Barbara, my first wife?
I've been calling you every half hour for days. I was hoping to talk to you before the subpoena arrived.
I'm having it for lunch.
I'm sorry about that, Fletcher.
Tut, tut, my dear, think nothing of it. What's a little contempt of court charge between old friends?
It's the lawyers who are doing it, Fletch. They insist. They're real worried about the $8,000 you owe me.
Is it that much?
$8,412.
Golly, I should have taken care of that. How careless of me.
It really isn't my fault, Fletch. I mean the contempt of court thing. I didn't do it.
Not to worry, Barbara. A little enough matter. Easy to straighten out. I'll pop down to court Friday morning and straighten things out in a switch of a lamb's tail.
You're wonderful, Fletcher.
Tut, tut.
I mean, it's not the money I care about or anything. I know how much you earn from the newspaper. You can't afford it.
I understand precisely.
You do?
Certainly, Barbara.
Fletcher, I'm still in love with you.
I know. Isn't it awful?
It's been 2 years.
That long?
I never even see you around town anymore. I've put on weight.
You have?
I've been eating too much. I heard you got married again and divorced again.
Just a temporary defection from my one true love.
Really? Why did you get married again?
It came over me one day, with chills and prickly heat.
Why did you get divorced?
Well, Barbara, it came down to a question between the cat and me. One of us had to go. The cat went first.
I didn't call you all the time you were married.
Thank you.
I just heard you got divorced last week. I bumped into Charlie.
How's Charlie?
Fletcher, do you think you and I could make it together again?
How much weight did you say you've gained?
A lot. I'm really gross.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I don't like the place I'm living. Are you still in the apartment on Clearwater Street?
I still live on the Street of Magnificent Plumbing.
I'm sorry I divorced you, Fletch. I really regret it.
Ah, well, easy come, easy go.
That's not funny.
I'm trying to eat a sandwich.
What I'm trying to say is I'm trying to apologize to you for divorcing you.
Don't give it a thought.
I've grown up a lot.
It comes with gaining weight, I think.
The girls really bothered me, you know.
Girls? What girls?
Oh, Fletch, you were just making love to everybody in town all the time. You'd be gone for days on end. Sometimes I think you were making love to 5 or 6 different girls a week. I mean, you never hesitated.
I get seduced easily.
I thought it was awful. Every girl I looked at on the street, complete strangers, their eyes would say, "I've made love to your husband, too." It was spooky. I mean, you never hesitated to make love to somebody.
It's good exercise.
Anyway, I think I've grown up to accept that.
You have?
Yes, Fletch, I understand. You're a male nymphomaniac.
I am not.
You are, Fletch. You just run around the city fucking people.
Well,
you can't deny it.
Well,
I think it's cute. I can accept it now. You do understand that at first it bothered me.
Well, I don't know why it should.
It did, but it won't anymore. I'm all grown up now, and you can play with anybody you like.
Fletch drank from the carton of milk.
Fletch?
Yes, Barbara?
What I mean is, can we live together again?
What a wonderful idea.
Are you serious?
Sure, Barbara.
My lease runs out at the end of this week.
Move in Friday.
Really?
Friday morning. Sorry I won't be able to help you, but as you know, I have to run down to court for a few minutes.
I know. How awful.
But it would make everything all right if you're there at the apartment when I get back.
I've got a lot of junk now. I'll need a whole moving van.
That's all right. You just back the moving van up to the service elevator and get yourself moved in. Arrange things as you like. And then when I get back from court, we'll have a nice lunch together.
Terrific. Fletcher, you're beautiful.
Just like the old days, Barbara.
I'd better get packing.
See you Friday. Maybe I'll take the weekend off.
Fletcher, I love you.
As Fletch was reaching for the second half of the second sandwich, the phone rang again. It was almost 2 o'clock.
I am Fletcher's line.
Fletcher, that's you.
Linda, my second wife.
What happened to you the other night?
What other night?
Friday night, you told me to rush right over to the apartment. You weren't there.
I got held up.
It wasn't funny, Fletcher. I mean, if that's your idea of a joke.
Are you sore?
Of course not. At your apartment, I got all ready. I washed my hair and everything. It took me a while to find the dryer, the hair dryer.
You washed your hair?
And I waited and waited. I slept on the couch.
Poor Linda.
It wasn't very funny.
I told you I was stoned.
What happened to you?
I ended up at the beach.
Couldn't you have waited for me?
I didn't know I was going.
Did you spend the night with a girl?
Yes.
You're something else.
Linda, I've been thinking.
Doesn't sound it.
I mean, since the other night. I had to go think.
I understand. You always had to go think.
I've been thinking about you since the other night. What I mean is, you know, I don't earn much here on the newspaper.
I know. By the way, Mr. Gillette says there was something funny about your check.
I know. He has me in court Friday morning.
Poor Fletch.
I agree. We must do something, Linda.
Like what?
Well, I mean, I'm not earning much, and you've lost your job at the boutique, and it just doesn't make sense for us to be running 2 apartments.
We're divorced.
Who cares about that? You wanted to move back in last Friday night.
I still do.
So why don't you? Give up your apartment and move in.
I want to.
So, okay, do it.
When?
Friday morning. That way we can spend the weekend together.
You mean move in permanently?
I mean, give up your apartment, get a moving van, and move your junk back into our apartment Friday morning. Put everything away, arrange things as you like, and be there when I get back from court.
Really?
Really. Will you do it?
Sure, that's a wonderful idea.
I think it makes great sense, don't you?
I hate this place I'm living in anyway.
Maybe you'll even have lunch ready when I get back.
Maybe we'll go to the beach for the weekend. Wonderful idea. I really do love you, Fletch.
Me too. I mean, I love you, too. See you Friday. Chapter 24. Clara Snow is an incompetent idiot. She knows nothing about this business. She is too stupid to learn. Frank Jaffe, editor-in-chief of the News Tribune, was sober only a few moments a day. 2 o'clock in the afternoon was not one of those moments. At 9 in the morning, he was bleary-eyed and hungover. At 11, he was reasonable, but also reasonably nervous. He saw everyone as being in the way between him and his first luncheon martini. At 11:30, he would dash through the city room to commence drinking his lunch. From 2 to 4:30, he was coherently drunk. At 5, he was impatient, irascible. Evening drinking began at 6. By 9, he was incoherently drunk. In the evening, he would phone the office, frequently shouting orders no one could ever understand. He would spend much of the next day countermanding the orders he could remember which nobody had understood anyway. From the editor-in-chief's office would flow daily a sheaf of oblique clarifications, which disturbed everyone and made no sense to anyone. Fletch wondered how he had the energy for Clara Snow. From across his oak desk, Frank's eyes, behind glasses, appeared to be trying to focus on him from the bottom of a jar of clam juice.
What?
Clara Snow is an incompetent idiot. She knows nothing about newspapering. She's so stupid she can't learn.
She's your boss.
She is an incompetent idiot. She almost got me killed. She might yet.
What did she do?
I've been working on this drugs on the beach story for too goddamn long a time, too. Clara Snow reported to the chief of police at the beach that I was there on an investigation and getting close to something.
What's wrong with that? You might need police protection.
What's wrong with it is that I believe the chief of police is the source of the drugs on the beach.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Chief Graham Cummings, I've known him for 10 years, 15 years. He's a wonderful man.
He's the drug source.
The hell he is.
The hell he isn't. Frank found it difficult to focus on people.
Fletcher, I think I'm taking you off this assignment.
The hell you are.
You spent too goddamn long at it, and you've come up with nothing. You've just been horsing around at the beach.
If you take me off it, Frank, I will write it for the Chronicle Gazette and publish it with the statement that you refuse to publish it.
We've been knocking the police too hard lately.
Graham Cummings is a drug source.
What evidence do you have?
I'll write it.
You have no evidence.
Besides that, he's thrown me out of town. If I'd been honest with him this morning and told him I have evidence, I think he would have killed me. If he gets one whiff of the evidence, he will kill me. I asked Clara Snow not to call the police.
And Clara asked me, and I said, go ahead.
It was a damn fool thing to do, Frank. When a man's on a story, he knows what he's doing. If I had wanted police protection, I would have sought it. It is not for you guys, you or Clara, to sit back here setting me up as a clay pigeon.
Did you tell Clara you suspected Cummings?
No, because when I was talking to her last Friday, I didn't suspect Cummings.
So what are you saying?
Frank looked like an unhappy frog sitting on a pad. As what Fletch was saying went through his mind, his chest expanded, his cheeks expanded, and his eyes widened. His face became red. He turned his swivel chair sideways to his desk. That way, he didn't have to look at Fletcher at all.
Look, Fletcher, you and I have quite a bit to talk about. Clara says you've been pretty obnoxious. She says you dress like a slob, never wear shoes in the office, never answer your telephone, that she never knows where you are, that you're not working very hard, not working at all, that you don't accept editing, that you're sort of rude. She says you're insubordinate and disobedient.
Gee, boss, no wonder she set me up to be murdered.
You're being rude now.
Clara didn't know she was setting you up to be murdered, and I don't believe it yet.
Graham Cummings is a decent guy.
You have me saying Clara's an idiot and Clara saying I'm an idiot. Doesn't that lead you to some conclusion?
What conclusion?
Separate us. If you insist on her being an editor, let her go make someone else's life miserable.
I won't do that. You'll live with her.
No, you live with her. Frank's full face snapped to Fletcher. He tried to glare. Instead, his face just turned redder. Frank said,
You're hanging on here by a thread now, boy.
I sell newspapers.
If it weren't that you're scheduled to pick up a Bronze Star Friday, I'd fire you in a minute.
What I'm really saying, Frank, is that I am on a story, an investigation of the source of the drugs at the beach. I'm not being dramatic, but I might be killed. If I am killed, some superior ought to know why. I believe the chief of police at the beach, Graham Cummings, is the source. Clara Snow has tipped him off that I am on his heels. This morning he called me in to ask me what I know. This was after I tried to get arrested Sunday night. I tried very hard to get arrested. I belted three cops in the chief's presence. I got a crack on the head, but I did not get arrested. This morning I played dumb, very, very dumb. I told him I know nothing but the obvious. He told me to get out of town. It's reasonable to expect that if he begins to believe I've got hard evidence on him, he might want to kill me. You and your incompetent, idiotic Clara Snow will have killed me.
You're dramatizing yourself.
Maybe.
So what are you saying? You don't want to finish the story?
I'll finish it.
When will you have it finished?
Pretty soon.
I want to see it.
You'll see it.
You better pick up the Bronze Star Friday morning.
By all means, Frank. Have reporters and photographers there. I look forward to having my face splashed all over the newspaper Saturday morning. That would surely get me killed.
You collect that medal.
Definitely, Frank. Friday morning, 10 o'clock, the Marine Commandant's office.
You pick up that medal, Fletcher, or Fridays will be your last paycheck.
I wouldn't think of disappointing you, Frank.
By the way, Clara also says you got sleazy divorce lawyers all over this office. Keep them out of here.
Right, Frank. Fletch stood up and changed his tone of voice entirely.
What do you think of Alan Stanwyck?
He's a shit.
Why?
Frank said.
Stanwyck has fought every sensible piece of noise pollution legislation brought up in the last 5 years.
And he's won?
Yes, he's won.
What else do you know about him?
Nothing. He's a shit. Go get killed and maybe we'd have a story.
Thanks, Frank.
Anytime.
Chapter 25. Good afternoon, sir. The head waiter recognized him, even dressed in a full suit. The man was wasted on a tennis pavilion.
Are you looking for the Underwoods?
Actually, I'm looking for Joan Stanwyck, Fletch said.
Mrs. Stanwyck is playing tennis, sir. Court 3. There's an empty table at the rail. Shall I have a screwdriver brought to you?
Thank you. Fletch sat at the round table for two. Along the rail were flower boxes. In the third court away from Fletch, Joan Stanwyck was playing singles with another woman.
Your screwdriver, sir. Shall I charge this to the Underwoods?
Please. Half of Court 3 was in the shade of the clubhouse. This made serving difficult half the time for both players. One would think Joan Collins Stanwyck could get a better court at the Rackets Club. Half the people on the tennis pavilion were still dressed in tennis whites. The other half were dressed for the evening. It was 5:20. Joan Collins Stanwyck played tennis like a pro, but utterly without the flash of passion that made a champion. She was smooth, even, polished. A well-educated, well-experienced tennis player. It was difficult to get anything by her or to outthink her, yet she didn't seem to be deeply involved, paying attention. She was also without the sense of fun and of joy that a beginning tennis player has. She was competent, terrifically competent, and bored. She won the set, walked to the net, shook hands with her opponent, and smiled precisely as she would have if she had lost. They both collected sweaters and ambled up to the pavilion. Fletch turned his chair to face the entrance. She had to greet many people, using the same shake of the hand and smile as she used at the net. It was a moment before her eyes wandered along the rail and found Fletch. He stood up. She excused herself and came over immediately.
Why, John, I thought you were in Milwaukee.
Montana, Fletch said.
Yes, of course, Montana.
She sat at the table.
And just before leaving for the airport Saturday, my boss called and asked me to stay a few more days. Some customers to see.
Why didn't you call me?
I was busy seeing customers.
He was sitting at the table, finishing his drink. Besides, I thought I would come by on Tuesday.
Why Tuesday?
Because you said Tuesday was the day your husband came home from the office at a reasonable hour.
Beneath her tan, her cheeks turned red.
I see.
Didn't you say your husband has Tuesdays reserved for you?
You're rather putting it to me, aren't you, John?
I hope to. Joan Collins Stanwyck, keeping her eyes in his, laughed. She had a lovely throat. She said,
Well, now.
He said, I'm sorry I can't offer you a drink.
You ask a great many more questions than you appear to ask, John. And what's more, you listen to the answers. You must be very good at what you do.
What do I do?
Why, sell furniture, of course. Isn't that what you said?
I'm really quite expert on beds.
She said, Would you believe that I have one?
She had one at the Racquets Club, a three-quarter-sized bed in a bright room overlooking the pool area. She said it was her changing room. It had a full bathroom and a closet full of tennis dresses, evening gowns, skirts, sneakers, and shoes. She had given him directions to the door on the corridor above the dining room. By the time he arrived, she was out of the shower and wrapped in an oversized towel. Joan Collins Stanwyck was more interested in making love than in playing tennis, but again, she was educated and experienced without the flash that makes champions, and she was without the playful joy of the beginner.
It's really remarkable, John,
isn't it?
That's not what I meant.
What's remarkable?
Your bone structure.
I have one.
One what?
One bone structure. I'm very attached to it.
I should think you would be.
Yes, yes.
But you never noticed?
Never noticed what?
Never in the showers in Texas or whatever?
It's been a long time since I took a shower in Texas.
Al's bone structure.
Al's bone structure? What about it?
It's identical to yours.
My what?
Your bone structure.
What do you mean?
I mean the width of your shoulders, the length of your back, your arms, your hips, your legs are identical to Alan's.
Your husband's?
Yes, didn't you ever notice? You must have been in shower rooms with him in Texas or something. The shape of your head, everything.
Really?
You two don't look a bit alike. You're blonde and he's dark, but actually you're just alike.
Something only a wife would notice.
He weighs 10 or 12 pounds more than you do, I'd say, but your bone structures are the same.
That's very interesting. She rolled onto her elbows and forearms, looking closely at his mouth.
Your teeth are perfect, too, just like Alan's.
They are?
I'll bet you haven't a cavity.
I haven't.
Neither has he.
How very interesting.
She said, Now I bet you're insulted.
Not a bit.
I don't suppose it's polite to compare you to my husband just after we've made love and made love.
I find it interesting.
You're saying to yourself the only reason this broad was attracted to me is because I have the same bone structure as her husband, is that right?
Yeah, actually, I'm terribly hurt.
I didn't mean to hurt you.
I'm going to cry.
Please, don't cry.
I'm dying of a broken heart.
Oh, don't die, not here.
Why not here?
Because if I had to have your body taken away, I'd be absolutely stuck trying to pronounce your last name. I'd be so embarrassed.
Is it embarrassing being in bed with a man whose last name you can't pronounce?
It would be if he died and had to be taken away. I'd have to say at the door, His name is John, an old friend of the family. Don't ask me his last name. What is your last name again, John?
Zaminawinker Oleski.
God, what a moniker. Say it again?
Oleski. Zaminawinker Oleski.
You mean someone actually married you with a name like that?
Yep,
and now there are three little Zaminawinker Oleskis. What was her maiden name? I mean your wife's.
Fletcher.
That's a nice name. Why would she give up a nice name like that to become Zambangi or whatever it is?
Zaminawinker Oleski. It's more distinguished than Fletcher.
It's so distinguished no one can say it. What is it, Polish?
Romanian.
I didn't know there was a difference.
Only Poles and Romanians care about the difference.
What is the difference?
Between Poles and Romanians, they make love differently.
Oh?
Twice I've made love Polish style.
Now I'll show you how Romanian would do it.
Polish style was all right.
But you haven't seen the Romanian style yet.
Why didn't you make love Romanian style in the first place?
I didn't think you were ready for it.
I'm ready for it.
It was 8:30. In 48 hours, Fletch was scheduled to murder her husband. Chapter 26. Wednesday morning, Fletch had a great interest in not being seen by the police at the beach. Doubtless, Chief Cummings had told his officers to pick up Fletch on sight. The man could not bear investigation, and he had enough ammunition to use against Fletch to make life very difficult for him. Possession of marijuana, possession of heroin, physical assault upon three separate police officers. And when Chief Cummings ran out of charges at the beach, he could turn Fletch over to the city police to face a charge of fraud. Fletch was careful in his stepping. In jeans, shoeless, and shirtless, he started shortly after sunrise looking for Gummy. It was 8:45 when July said he had just seen Gummy parking a Volkswagen minibus on Main Street. Fletch found the flower-decorated bus and waited in the shadow of a doorway. At 9:40, Gummy appeared. While he had been waiting, Fletch had counted 5 police cars passing on Main Street. Gummy was unlocking the driver's door to the bus. Fletch stepped beside him and said, "Take me around to my pad, will you, Gummy? I need to talk to you." Gummy's face pimples twitched. "Come on, Gummy, I've got to talk to you about Bobby." In the room, Fletch said, "Bobby's dead, Gummy." Gummy said, "Oh." Fletch smashed him in the face with his fist. Gummy's head snapped back and turned, his long hair twirling. His feet moved slowly. He did not fall. He turned back, his head low, looking at Fletch through watering eyes. The look was resentful. The kid had never been hit before. "I said Bobby is dead, Gummy, and oh is not a proper response. You killed her, and you know it." Gummy stepped toward the door. Fletch said, "I've got bad news for you, Gummy. Bobby's death means the heat's on. Fat Sam is turning state's evidence." "Bullshit! He's written me a nice little deposition naming Chief Graham Cummings as the source. Everything is in the deposition, including your Hawaiian shirt. He's pinning the actual sale of drugs on you. He insists he was just a receiver." The kid had stopped moving toward the door. His eyes were wide and innocent.
"I never pushed. I was just carrying."
"You were transferring, baby." Gummy had blood at the corner of his lip.
"I never sold any of the stuff."
"Fat Sam is laying it on you."
"The bastard!"
And he assigned the deposition in big, flowing handwriting with his real name, which I forget for the moment.
"Charles Witherspoon."
"What?"
"Charles Witherspoon."
"That's right."
"Where is this, what do you call it?"
"Deposition. I left it in the city. Do you think I'd be crazy enough to bring it down here?" "He signed it Charles Witherspoon."
"Shit."
"Let me help you, Gummy." Fletch opened the case of his portable typewriter. He placed an original and 2 carbon sheets in the carriage. "You need help." Gummy stood in the dark room with his hands in his back pockets. "By the way, Gummy, I am Fletcher of the News Tribune."
"You're a reporter?"
"Yeah."
"I knew there was something funny about you. I saw you riding in a gray Jaguar last week, I think Thursday night."
"Did you tell anybody you saw me?"
"No."
Gummy sat on the floor. He leaned his back against the wall.